up, y'all? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week and some big titles ending here, starting with American Vampire 1976, number 10, from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Raphael Albuquerque. This is the big finale to the American Vampire saga, a comic book that, not exactly, but we have followed almost the entire time we have been reviewing and talking about comic books. So what did you think about this issue, and what did you think about the wrap-up as a whole?
I mean, I don't know. It felt. Do you think this is really the last they'll do?
That's what they've said.
I know it's what they're saying, but the way, obviously, like, we are going to sort of spoil it. It's sort of Skinner's story, and we bring that to a close without saying too much about what actually happens. But I don't know. To me, it felt like the door's definitely still open. Mm-hmm. It felt a little abrupt, honestly. Not in necessarily a bad way, but I was like, oh, it's over.
Huh. Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I think they set out to tell Skinner's sweet story and to finish that up, and that does finish as definitively as you can finish something for a supernatural series. But
yeah,
like you said, they leave the world open, and I think that's purposely so that if they do want to 5 years, 10 years down the road, something like that, do something that is not called American Vampire, but maybe has another name, they definitely could do something like that. But as a finish, I think they've finished big. There's an enormous monster fight in Las Vegas.
The action was great. I liked the twists and turns of what happened. And I liked that it sort of came back to the core of, like, Pearl and Skinner at the end of the day. It was good. Like, I'm not knocking. I just was like, sort of like, oh dear.
Yeah. It didn't quite have the emotional heft that I would have wanted it to, and that might be because of the scale versus the emotion. But at the same time, I enjoyed it. I had fun reading it. And we'll see. We'll see if they revisit it at some point.
Yeah. Moving on. I feel like give it a couple years, they're going to get a little itch, yeah. A little vampire.
A little bite. They'll feel a little bite. Suicide Squad, Get Joker, number one from DC Comics, written by Brian Azzarello, art by Alex Maleev, as you might expect with the new movie, The Suicide Squad, coming out in theaters and HBO Max. Tons of content coming out from DC Comics. Everybody loves the old content minds. But here, this is a all-star team working together. You got a writer and artist pair that are names in and of themselves. This is a black label book, so don't expect it to be the squeaky clean adventures of the Suicide Squad. There's a lot of cursing. There's a lot of death. There's a lot of blood that goes on here as they try to get Joker. I will say I enjoyed this book as a solid Suicide Squad book until the end, which I thought was a great twist. And got me very excited.
Yeah, I thought you were going
to
say you didn't like it. I was like, I thought the twist was so good.
No, it was good. It was just, I was like, okay, yeah, this is a good Brian Azzarello, Red Hood starring Suicide Squad book. I get it. I know how the Suicide Squad works. That's fine. I've read this a bunch. But what happens at the end here is a great twist that sets up however long the series is going to go. I loved it. And totally jazzed for issue number two.
Yeah, I mean, putting the Red Hood as the sort of the main guy and having him be just a straight-up hero, I think, is great. Really helps a lot. The twist is great. I like the touches of sort of the modern world a little bit. Like, one of the members of the team is, like, was at the Capitol on January 6th, which I thought was, like, I was like, oh, shit, this feels very real. Yeah, but I thought that was a cool twist.
It's funny. I don't think that Brian Azzarello ever necessarily just, you know, tosses one off or something like that. But you can kind of tell when he's a little more into something. And it was touches like that that made me think, okay, this wasn't just them backing up a money truck to Brian Azzarello and Alex Maleev to get them to do a Suicide Squad book, mashing it up with Joker. This is something a little more, and that's what you finally get by the end.
And I love the design of the Joker here. It's a little bit of a different look. It's cool. And just the dialogue just really shines. Azzarello, that's why you get Azzarello. Like, it's just really fun conversations.
Next up, Spirits of Vengeance, Spirit Rider, number one from Marvel, written by Taboo and B. Earl, art by Paul Davidson. This is a one-shot mashing up Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider and also a Ghost Rider that was introduced in the Doctor Strange not a ghost rider, excuse me, a spirit rider.
Spirit rider, Alex.
Yeah, I don't know how I made that mistake. That's a real,
yes,
real goof on my part.
Come on. This isn't our first rodeo when it comes to the different spirits of vengeances.
I barely know what's going on here, but I do like the story, and I thought Paul Davidson's art was very good. I wish it was a little less text-heavy, because I like the art so much, and I felt like they were telling a good story, but it was obscuring visually what was going on occasionally.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. Like, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot to explain. I mean, the Ghost Rider sort of sub-universe is confusing because it's all stacked on top of each other. Unlike, like, the Batman, the Bat Family, where it sort of spreads out and different characters find their own little spot. So far, Ghost Rider has just been like, one guy's a Ghost Rider, then another person is, and then another person, and that's about it. And sometimes they meet, but it's weird when they meet.
Yeah. Some of them have red hair, but some of them have blonde hair. But it's like little reddish. It's like a little bit of a reddish hair.
Because they're fire hair.
Very different, mind you, from the Bat Family, where it's like, yes, they all have black hair, but they're different heights.
That's 100% true. Yeah, put those Robins in a line. I'm sure we can all tell each and every one of them apart. No doubt. We're fans. But I think there was a lot to explain. I really like this character of Kushala. Coming in as a demon rider, leaving as what is called a spirit rider, and it seems like we're going to get more stories from her. She travels back in time. Doctor Strange is sort of here as a piece of technology, essentially, who's just like, here you go, keep going. But it was cool. It felt like it had stakes, especially for an issue that really seems to be just setting up this character. Like, it was cool. I hope, reading this, I hope they do sort of expand out the spirit of vengeance part of the Marvel.
Yeah. Listen, this may be just the issues we're checking in on, but it feels like Ghost Rider has been in this fixing phase for months, if not years now, where they keep putting out one-shots to be like, oh, okay, this weird thing happened with Ghost Rider and some other title. Now we need to fix this with a one-shot and get them back to status quo. And then some other weird thing happens and they release another one-shot. And so, I don't know, not that I necessarily need to read an ongoing Ghost Rider title. It's not my favorite character. But I think the Ghost Rider that they have over at Avengers is great. I love reading about him. I don't know if we need all of these other ones necessarily right now, but, you know, figure out what the next good story is and tell it versus constantly tweaking and tweaking and tweaking.
Well, and I think like adding Robbie Reyes as the Ghost Rider over in Avengers with a car, it was like, look, he has a car. It's a little different. And then it's like, well, but we also want to keep all the motorcycles guys because they're fun too. And it's, I think like let them all be, but just make them different as opposed to the same.
The Me You Love in the Dark, number one from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona. This is the team off of Middle West, which was an all-ages Wizard of Oz-esque story, a little bit, kind of, sort of brushed up against that, one might say. That was very deep and really pushed Scotty Young into darker, more young adult territory, at the very least. But here we're seeing him venturing into adult territory. This is we're not quite sure what this is yet, but this definitely feels like gothic romance and about an author, an artist. She is hitting a dry spell, moves to a creepy mansion that may or may not be haunted, and is trying to find inspiration there. Not too much of a spoiler to say that, it definitely is haunted. And the ghost is pretty scary here.
Yeah.
I like this quite a bit. What do you think, Justin?
I really like the way that the art sort of, it feels like we're seeing a different visual interpretation of a ghost. We have this like sort of flowing white motif that is like ghostly music. She talks to the ghost before the ghost is actually a real ghost. She's just like doing that thing where you're like, I'm scared of ghosts, but I'm going to pretend there's one here just to be very cool about it. And then turns out she maybe conjures a ghost, maybe doesn't. I guess we'll see. Cool issue. Definitely going to pick up the next.
Next up, Lucky Devil, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Fran Gallan. This is about a guy who gets possessed by a demon, kills a ton of people in very creative ways. And then I believe by the end of the issue is trying to start some sort of cult around the demon because he still has the demon's powers, even though it has been exorcised from him. I like the art in here quite a bit. It was creative and gross and kind of reminded me a little bit of the X-Men event Inferno from back in the day with
good call.
Subways eating people and things. But it almost felt like a recap of a series I hadn't read, you know, because the main character is recounting everything that happened previously. So I don't know. I expected that to end at some point, not end at the end of the first issue and then lead into whatever's happening next. I don't know. What was your take on it?
I agree. I like the art a lot. I thought this was a good issue that sets up we sort of like fall through a couple phases of the premise. It's like, dude's possessed by like a mega demon. So a bunch of fucked up stuff happens. That's scary and fun. Demon leaves, power stays. Now he is essentially the demon in every which way. So it's cool. I like the premise. I'm curious now we've established sort of point zero. Like, what's the move here?
Yeah, it felt a little bit like a potentially more efficient way of getting through the first arc of a book, because like you're saying, every single one of those things be more than enough for an issue, and I'd be happy to 100%. Follow that. But it sort of felt like maybe Cullen got not bored of the premise, but felt like, all right, let's just get to it quicker. Let's get through it from the first issue and then move on to the thing. So like you said, curious to check out to see what happens in issue two.
If it is a cult story, then that's like, yeah, like let's get all this groundwork out of the way so we can get to this like fucked up, deep, very powerful demon cult that seems to be just like running rampant around the world, essentially. He's just like killing people. There's no fake imaginary thing about it. It's just like straight up.
Next up, Batman number 111 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Jorge Jimenez and Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. This is finishing up a big arc on Batman and then kicking off the Fear State crossover that's, I believe, going to start next month as Batman fights to save the Unsanity Collective and finds himself face-to-face with the Scarecrow, something we already knew was going to happen, but we didn't actually know how. Scarecrow, very powered up now in this comic book.
Big I love threat. This scary, scary Scarecrow.
So good. I also love the twists that happen here. We've talked about this quite a bit on the podcast, but Future State set up a lot of possible things that could be happening in the DC universe, bad things. Yeah. And everything that's been happening in this arc has been leading up to this thing where Simon Saint is running the magistrate program. They've banned vigilantes in Gotham City, and that may still happen, but things go in a very big, very different direction by the end of the issue. And I love that twist of expectations there if you've read those books, but I think it works regardless whether you have read them or not.
Yeah. And I like this Unsanity Collective as a group that's hanging out in Gotham City. Like, they sort of have like young X-Men vibes in the way they are going about their business. So that's cool. And I'm starting to like Orphan Maker here. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I do like Orphan Maker. I don't know if you're talking about the backup story, which is fun, and sort of these tales of Orphan Maker. But in the issue, in the main story in the issue, Orphan Maker, Harley Quinn, Batman teaming up, it's a fun, weird, different team. I mean, we were joking about it earlier, but it feels very different from Batman being backed up by Dick Grayson and Tim Drake, which is all variations of the same character in a certain way, or at least arguably variations. Orphan Maker, very different. Harley Quinn, obviously very different. And it's a weird mix. It's off-putting, but it's interesting to read.
I want to hear see the issue where all the Robins are like, hey, Bruce, what's up with the people you've been palling around with? Yeah. You're making us feel we tried so hard, and now you're hanging out with
them now.
Yeah, exactly. Where are we on our own finally? We're in our 30s, I think.
Hey, it just occurred to me. This might be really obvious. Is he Orphan Maker because Bruce is constantly adopting orphans? So it's the opposite thing.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think that. I thought it was a name that you come up with when you're like a teenager and you're like, what sounds cool? I kill dads.
I so I make the strongest orphans. Thing imaginable. A dad. My dad.
But yes, hearing you say that, I think Orphan Maker is sort of what Bruce would not like, because he was orphaned.
Exactly.
He would hate that.
He'd hate it. Do you know what Bruce wouldn't hate, though? He's orphan made. Do you know what Bruce wouldn't hate? Bruce would not hate taking a little time to talk about this week's sponsor, Manscaped. Attention, listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do you have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with a fourth generation brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your
pants.
Don't
go to pube planet. Don't go to pube planet,
though. Oh, my God. I visited. Have you been to the pube planet?
Yeah, I crashed there. And boy, it was like, look what you did. You ruined it. You ruined everything.
You maniacs. You blew it up. Except the opposite of that. Whatever the opposite of that is.
Blew it up with pubes. There's pubes everywhere.
Pubes. It's pubes. Pube planet is pubes. I run around shouting that everybody's like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know. We live here.
Anyway, the orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job for the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your whole solar system. First scheduled for liftoff, new Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. This spaceship is here to guide you on a journey to trim your body, balls, butt, and even Uranus.
Oh, it was all been building up to that. That's what I refer to. Everything is my solar system. Get 20% off plus free shipping with fansided20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com for a clean trinity and beyond. Your space balls. Well, thank you.
We really have to figure out what that Trinity thing is. I'm still
that Trinity. I think I know what it is now. But
okay, I think I figured it out too. It's great. Your orphan maker. If you
I don't want to say that.
But the opposite. But the opposite.
Yeah.
Deadpool, Black, White, and Blood, number one from Marvel, written by Tom Taylor, Ed Brisson, and James Stokoe, art by Phil Noto, Wils Portacio, and James Stokoe. I should probably guess from the title, this is another one of Marvel's collections of short story about the characters. In this case, it's about Deadpool, so we get three stories here. I will be honest, I threw this in the stack because I thought it would be a gimme for Pete, and then Pete decided to not show up for the stack.
Truth. Oh, boy. But it is a gimme to Pete. And this is good Deadpool. This is some good boilerplate Deadpool stuff. I really like the first story with the black and white and red all over joke basically made real.
Very funny.
Very fun.
And, the James Stokoe story, I think, was particularly good. We've talked about his books quite a bit, and I thought the art was really good on them. The writing was really good. So just a fun collection all over the place. Next up, I think we can talk about Trover Saves the Universe, number one from Image Comics by Tess Stone. This is based on the video game by Justin Roiland, who is the co-creator of Rick and Morty. Trover Saves the Universe, I don't know anything about the video game. If you haven't, I guess you can jump right into this and you'll get it. But it's basically like a corporate murder mystery with a bunch of people with weird eyeballs and stuff killing each other.
With faces for eyeballs.
Yeah. This, to me, felt very, I never know how to pronounce his name, Yonan Vasquez, the guy who did Invader Zim and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, reminded me of that a lot more than Rick and Morty, personally.
Yes, and I didn't know what was going on for a lot of this. I was like, is this something that is a thing and I just don't know about it? Or is this not a thing and nobody knows about it?
But, I'm not sure. I don't know. But it was... Somebody knows about it, I'm sure.
That's the spirit. That put that on the spine. Somebody knows about it.
Here's another... Oh, are you going to say something else about this? Okay, here's another one that was kind of a gimme for Pete that I threw out there, and again, not here, but Transformers King Grimlock, number one from IDW, written by Steve Orlando. art by Augustin Padilla. And in this, Grimlock, the dinosaur transformer, is thrust back in time into a very Camelot sword and sorcery type situation where they were hoping for Optimus Prime. Instead, they got Grimlock. It's fun. It's a fun mashup.
It is fun. And reading this, I was like, God, do you remember when the Dinobots came out? What a time. It was like, it's like they cracked the code. They were like, people seem to like these cars. What if we also made them dinosaurs? Just genius.
The thing that really drew me into this was seeing that you have a Grimlock book written by Steve Orlando, which is a wild choice for this. But he brings his love of all things kitschy and weird and puts them together here. He's adding some new stuff with some wooden transformers maybe in the next issue.
Well, when I saw that, I was like, oh, man, it would be suck to be a wooden transformer. One night laying in some water, mm-hmm. you're busted.
Yeah, Pinocchio, warped. The original wooden transformer. Next up.
I just want to read the actual line next from the end of the book, the to be continued.
Yeah.
The tragedy of the wood bots, which is the fact that we got to that line is just beautiful.
Good stuff. Crush and Lobo, number 3 from DC Comics. Really, I put the stack together for Pete. Real shame that he's not here. Written by Mariko Tamaki, art
When's
by
When's the Justin Amon stack Gay. Coming out? I feel like I'm at another man's birthday
I'll
party.
Tell you what. There's been several times where I've put together a Justin stack and you're not here. When is Alex's time? When is Alex's stack?
Wither the Alex stack. Tears running down.
Art by Amon K. Nahupan. In this issue, we're finally getting Crush and Lobo face-to-face in prison where Lobo is being held. Of course, I don't think this is too much of a surprise. Lobo was tricking Crush in order to break out of jail, but he does it in a fun way, and it's a fun Lobo book. I had a good time reading this one, too.
Yeah, this was my favorite issue of the series so far. I thought it was great to finally get Crush and Lobo together. It felt like we've sort of been building to this. Keeping still the some of the relationship storyline going that's for Crush on the backside, but great just like parent being a dick situation.
Geiger, number 5 from Image Comics by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank. In this issue, we are almost to the end of the first arc. I don't know if the character's actual name is Geiger, but the radioactive guy is bringing the two kids to a safe haven, the remainder of the United States government, along with the nuclear codes from the nuclear football. We find out a secret about one of the kids, and of course, things are not all well in this safe haven, as things are wont to do in a post-apocalyptic world. Justin, I know you've been a little down on this series, though I think we've all been very high on the Gary Frank arc in particular. What do you think? Is this ramping up and up for you in this issue, or are you still on the fence?
I'm still on the fence. Like, it's great art, good action. I want this comic to be more special. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's a comic where the hero is purposefully, like, where you don't have any like understanding of them or emotional connection to them. Because it's a cool, it's like watching someone play with action figures. Like, it's a cool look, it's a fun thing, but there's the emotional core, I haven't found it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think, like you said, the designs are good. I like the characters in it, but I don't know. I just need more. Maybe it should have been a graphic novel or something like that rather than a monthly series. But I'm still on board. I'll still read the next one, particularly because I like the team, but we'll see where it goes.
And I love the double-headed wolf is cool. Like, there's a lot of the character designs are cool. Mm-hmm. I'm curious where the story's going. And it does feel like it's like this guy lost his family, so he's not creating a new family. But I just want to know what – it's always people observing him being like, this guy lost his family. It's like, just let me know what he's feeling about the whole thing.
Yeah. 7 Secrets, number 11 from Boom Studios, written by Tom Taylor, art by Daniel DiNicolo. This is another solid issue of this book, but I know I keep mentioning this, but after the wild – game-changing twists of a couple of issues back, it feels like this is good, this is solid, I'll keep reading this, but I wasn't necessarily blown away or left mouth agape by this issue.
Your mouth was a little agape. Yeah. It's slightly agape for breathing purposes.
Yes. I do have a cold, so my nose is a little stuffed up, so you're correct.
Yeah, you need to, you're maybe too agape because all those germs are getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Close that mouth a little bit. I like this comic as well. It feels like, what I like about it is it feels like really big storytelling. Like, I think this is going to go on for a long time. We're going to really explore this world. The characters are really confidently written. I feel like we haven't seen, I still want to see a little bit more of the world of like mm-hmm. what is actually happening and sort of what these briefcases really mean. Because it's for something, we're still being kept in the dark a little bit here.
Yeah.
It's a secret. We're not in on the secret yet, and I wonder when or even if we will be.
Next up, The Nice House on the Lake, number 3 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. As with the last two issues, we're focusing on one of the characters who is the final remaining human beings in existence as the rest of the Earth has been burned and horrifyingly mangled by something. We don't know exactly what, only that one of their friends was responsible for it or involved in it in some way. And he gave them a nice house on the lake as a trade. But as we find out in this issue, things might not be all nice and pleasant. In fact, there is something else going on here, some sort of deeper mystery. This issue in particular really reminded me of a more adult version of The Woods, the book by James Tynion, which also slowly expanded outwards. It's mystery in this very isolated place. That book, it was a school that was transferred to an alien planet, and they didn't know what was going on. And we very slowly, like, resource managed and worked our way out, sort of like some sort of D&D campaign. And that's what this feels like here, but in the best, creepiest way.
I agree with you. Like, it reminded me, this issue, this is very dorky, but of the game Myst.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way, like, there's a mystery, we're sort of exploring the world a little bit, and you know there are clues, but they're just too opaque, you just can't see exactly what they are. And I just love the pacing of this. It's so meticulous. I think it's horrifying. But also, these are people being normal people at the same time.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Truly, I feel like James Tynion is just on a absolute just crush run. Like, everything he does is working so well. So, like, I just can't stop reading it and enjoying it.
Wait, we've got another James Tynion book later on in the stack. But next up, The Good Asian, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Pornsak Pinichot, art by Alexandre Tefengi. This is continuing our mystery back in the day in Chinatown, and some very bad things are happening for the future of Chinatown, potentially, by the end. But the art continues to be really good here. The mystery is engaging. The characters are interesting. I know we called this out before, but this really feels very Darwin Cook to me, in a very good, very reminiscent way.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think the writing's really good in this. It feels like it's very much in the world it's trying to be a part of. And the end of this issue was really intense. Like, I was really caught up in it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's good stuff. Green Lantern, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Jeffrey Thorne, art by Tom Rainey, Marco Santucci, and Andy McDonald. This issue does something we've been asking for the past couple of issues. It flips the order of the stories. In the front, we find out about our Teen Lantern and what's going on with her. She guns directly for Sinestro and the Yellow Lantern Corps. They're called the Yellow Lantern Corps, or is it the Fear Lanterns? I don't know.
It's all of those, I think.
Sure. The Sinestro Corps. That's what it's called.
Them Yellow Lanterns.
Yes. And then in the back up story, we get what's going on with Jon Stewart on his alien planet. No offense meant to Jon Stewart, but I think that is the right order for those stories. The Teen Lantern stuff is so good and so interesting. Good.
Agreed.
The mystery of her powers and what's going on. Great stuff. Can't wait to read more about that. And the Jon Stewart stuff is also solid.
Oh, interesting the way you said that. I feel like I sort of agree with what you're not saying, perhaps. I want the Jon Stewart story to be a little bit better. It feels like this Green Lantern book is committed to, like, we're going to make Jon Stewart sort of the main lantern here and then feature other lanterns on a rotating basis. And the story just isn't there with him, and I don't know what it is. So I hope that story sort of finds its spot. But I agree with you. The story in the front was great. Great Sinestro, the Yellow Lantern. We get to be in the head of the Yellow Lantern here during the fight, which was really cool. Really good. This is finally a Green Lantern book I feel like we can sink our teeth back into. It's been a while.
I agree. Next up, here's one I know you want to talk about. 7 to Eternity, number 17 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Jerome Pena. This is the final issue of this book that we've been following since the very beginning. Finally reveals what the title means here. And we get, I don't even know if it's necessarily a huge twist, because it's something that we talked with Rick Remender about on the show when he was here, because we finally do get a definitive answer of who is the good guy in this book and who is the bad guy. The answer is kind of, there are no good guys, but things go as bad as you'd expect from a Rick Remender book here at the end. But it's a great read, ties up really well, ties up exactly how it needs to. I was very upset and very satisfied by this ending.
100%. I feel the same way. And Rick Remender does it every time. We're like, well, look, here are the heroes. The hero's going to win here in some way. It's not going to be. And then it's just like hit after hit, knocking these characters down and having them fail in ways that we could have never predicted. And have the villain, who we've just slowly over the course of the series been led to sort of like, oh, this person's a philosopher. There's a moral. We're making some moral judgment on him, but he's actually an interesting character who just is making his own choices, the Mud King. And then in this issue, we're like, oh, no, there isn't that. You should be a little bit smarter with the way that you behave in when you're dealing with someone who is capable of being this evil. And, man, just great. The spring of the trap in this issue is so good, and it's a great ending. Really sad to see it go, and it ended in that sort of way where you are falling into the darkness along with the characters. Really good.
Great stuff. Next up, The Swamp Thing, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Mike Perkins. And this is the second Suicide Squad tie-in issue. Here we're getting the Suicide Squad going directly after Swamp Thing. This, to be perfectly honest, was a little frustrating for me, because I have been loving Swamp Thing. This title has been so good, so dark, so interesting.
Different.
And this, to me, whether it was or not, felt like corporately mandated crossover getting in the middle of this thing that I really like. Art's still good. Mike Perkins is awesome. Writing's still solid. Ram V is a very good writer. It's a fine Suicide Squad story. But given how much I've been liking this book up until now, this definitely gave me pause.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think maybe I liked it a little bit more than you. I think it does feel a little forced, and maybe that's just not, it's just the coincidence of it all. Or it's like, oh, I might as well use these characters since the movie's coming out. But it does feel a little bit like, if DC wants us to focus on the Get Joker book, let that be the Suicide Squad thing and let the rest of the books just tell their stories. But just like you, I remain a huge fan of this Swamp Thing run, even though it is a limited series, as we sort of discovered last issue. I'm excited to see where it's going to end up in these last 4 issues.
Yeah. Stillwater, number 9 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon K. Perez. In this issue, we're picking up on the cliffhanger of the last issue, where our main character finds out the kids of the town where nobody dies have built a Ewok village for themselves to live
truly,
in.
Truly, truly a direct Straight replica up. Of the Ewok village.
And they are sick and tired of never growing older. They want his help. They want to fight back. And by the end, that's exactly what's happened. I still really like this series, and I like how much it's ripping through story here and adding details. It's definitely expanding on the basic premise in ways that I could not have expected. I like it quite a bit. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, same thing. Like, it feels like Chip is really moving through the story points he wants to hit very, like, quickly, and sort of like, this is, I want to do this, move these characters here. Like, I feel like he has just a great index card board, and he's like boop 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 to get it where it wants to go. And maybe this is, I feel like I've said this a lot tonight. I feel like I just want more time with our main character. Like, we've explored the world so much, I want to sort of pull it back and hear more about what he thinks about all this. The first couple issues was very much like, I can't believe I'm in this town. This is crazy. This is my life now, I guess. And then it's just been seeing through over his shoulder all the fucked up stuff that's happened.
Yeah.
I sort of want to pull back and have him be like, okay, I'm going to make a little bit of sense of this before I go forward.
Yeah. And last but not least, as promised, it's our final Jamestown and the Fourth title, Wind Number 9 from Boone Studios, written by Jamestown and the Fourth, art by Michael Dialinus. In this issue, our main character is finding out more about the vampire fairy war that's been going on. We have our expansive cast going all over the place. I still like this. I still think this is good. The vampires are very creepy and terrifying and weird in particular. Like you've been saying, I do want a little more focused on Wind in this issue. We certainly get a lot of him, but there's this whole mystery about who he is, what his powers are, why he has his wings. And I think we need a little more of that.
I think so too. But what I do like about it is it does feel like the Wind and the book are sort of maturing a little bit at the same time as in each issue. And that's really cool. That feels like something you don't really see a lot in books. The characters sort of remain the same or change in big ways. And it feels like we're actually watching Wind mature. And this is tragically over the course of this issue. And the art almost feels like it's getting a little less cartoony. The wings especially, they feel like more realistic wings. And that is a sort of a nice also synergy of the look of the book feeling like it's maturing at the same time. So, again, meticulous James, meticulous Tynan coming through.
I don't know. I was going to say something about four standing for IV that's putting quality directly in your veins or something like that. But I'll workshop it.
That's good. That's good on the page.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
Come back for the Alex stack.
Oh, I hope.